Hey everyone, welcome back to another exciting episode of AI Unchained. We've got a fantastic lineup for you today as we dive deep into the ever-evolving worlds of AI, Web 3.0, and all the latest in tech.
That's right, Jack. Buckle up, folks, because today's episode is jam-packed with hot topics. We'll be dissecting some groundbreaking developments in artificial intelligence, exploring the latest innovations in decentralized technology, and of course, breaking down the most intriguing business and political events impacting the tech world.
And let's not forget, it's not just all geek talk here. We've got some fun debates lined up and maybe even a bit of friendly banter. It's AI, but not as you know it. We're here to keep it lively and, of course, unchained.
Definitely, Jack. So, for all our new listeners and loyal fans, thanks for tuning in. Whether you're on your commute, at the gym, or just relaxing at home, we really appreciate you joining us. Trust me, you won't want to miss the insights and laughs we've got in store.
Absolutely. So, without further ado, let's jump right into our first topic, the latest buzz in artificial intelligence. Core, I believe there's a rather controversial AI development you've been dying to talk about?
Oh, you know it, Jack. This one's sure to stir the pot a bit. We're talking about the new AI system that claims to predict criminal behavior with 90% accuracy.
Ah, yes. The Minority Report vibes are strong with this one.
Exactly. We'll break down the tech behind it, the ethical implications, and of course, we'll see if Jack can play devil's advocate.
Challenge accepted.
All right, let's get started. Stay tuned, everyone. It's about to get interesting.
All right, Core, I have to say, this rock analogy is pretty fascinating. Cryptography essentially takes something whole, like a rock, and breaks it into pieces that, even if separated, can be traced back to the original. It's almost poetic. What this makes me wonder, though, is how this principle applies to these Trump-linked crypto ventures. It seems like there's a whole lot more going on under the surface.
Oh, absolutely. Think about it. It's like you break a rock into pieces, and then everyone's trying to figure out the exact origin of those pieces. The Trump family projects are raising eyebrows because it's all tied to an existing influential figure. It raises the question, does their involvement muddy the waters of cryptography or shine a spotlight on its usefulness?
And the scrutiny from Democratic lawmakers is just one part of the picture. They're claiming that these ventures represent a conflict of interest and a national security threat. The fact that Eric Trump is on the board of World Liberty Financial just adds fuel to the fire. It's like having a rock you're not entirely sure is safe to unbreak.
You know, it's almost as if these ventures are turning into a political circus. You're mixing finance with identity here, and that gets tricky fast. But Jack, you gotta admit, they're really onto something when they tie the principles of cryptography, like ensuring those pieces fit perfectly back together, to this idea of transparent yet secure financial dealings.
True, but let's take a step back. Bitcoin is hitting highs again, and we have analysts predicting some bullish scenarios. Michael Van de Pope and those guys are tracking trends, hoping for a retest of $88,000. These predictions are making waves, but here we are, wrapping them in the context of crypto projects linked to politics.
Yeah, it's like Bitcoin's narrative never sits still. It's part finance, part social upheaval, and now politically charged. But remember, Bitcoin isn't getting sold off while everyone's scarfing down turkey on Thanksgiving. That market break gave it some room to breathe.
Not to mention, J.A. Martin and Xwin Research Japan's insights from CryptoQuant, all saying that the leveraged phase might be ending. This is a good sign for longer-term believers. It's kind of like we're waiting for the rock pieces to find their way back to a coherent whole.
And speaking of rocks and coherence, Bolivia's adoption of crypto, especially in response to hyperinflation, shows real-world application. Shops tagging products in USDT, banks offering crypto custody. This is where crypto becomes mathematical beauty meeting practical necessity.
Moving on to Venezuela. The stablecoin adoption there is growing amid all sorts of challenges. Maria Corina Machado's Bitcoin support, even winning a Nobel Prize for it, is huge. We're seeing crypto pushing forward as a solution despite its controversial edges. The rock piece is making sense in a broader context.
Yep, and Argentina is second in Latin America in crypto transactions, but the government isn't jumping on board. People are preserving their finances privately. It's like trying to unbreak the rock while the official stance remains hands-off.
Turkey's $200 billion crypto transaction landscape amidst inflation issues? Classic case of people turning to something they trust more when the local system fails. Their focus shifting from stablecoins to altcoins reflects broader pressures and risks.
Absolutely, and Iran's regulation is driving mining underground despite growing crypto inflows. High energy tariffs are pushing miners to hide. They are squeezing rocks through the cracks, hoping everything fits back without detection.
This is a global tapestry, right? Nigeria leading sub-Saharan Africa in crypto transactions highlights that, despite slowing global inflation, people still rely on crypto where the local monetary system is unreliable. New heights for digital assets sandbox their financial security.
That's exactly right, Jack. And just when folks got used to anonymity in crypto, new laws worldwide are now shining lights on every transaction. Privacy is becoming tougher to maintain, with blockchain transparency redefining what hidden means.
Ethereum's privacy cluster is fighting back, trying to build a privacy-preserving base layer. Developers now have to navigate laws crafted for traditional systems while keeping the data secure. It's juggling pieces of the same rock without changing its integrity.
Speaking of juggles, Tom Lee is scaling back his bullish predictions for Bitcoin, now eyeing $100,000, maybe reaching last October highs. Let's not forget the volatility Bitcoin bears with just 10 days of positive returns annually. That's it.
Right, and the leveraged phase ending is exactly what CryptoQuant research highlighted. Bitcoin's significant moves translate into big gains for traders lucky enough to catch those days. It's like betting on the rock breaks.
Exactly. Bitcoin's resilient buyers reflect broader market risk appetites. It's wrapped in options, trading volumes showing institutional flows. Predicting those 10 explosive days is like holding the right rock fragments at the critical moment.
So picking up from our discussion about historical implications of plagues and urbanization, it's fascinating to look at how these diseases used to spread primarily due to travel and dense population centers. Fast forward to today, we've got all these high-tech solutions like UVC light, air filtration, and waste monitoring barely being utilized.
Yeah, it's like we've got a whole arsenal of disease-fighting tools just sitting on the bench. UVC light can disinfect air and surfaces, high-frequency sound can disrupt microorganisms, and yet we rely mostly on vaccines and meds. Seems a bit old school, right?
Totally. And speaking of old school, remember we were talking about disposable plastics being seen as evil for the environment? Turns out, if done right, these plastics can actually sequester carbon. Imagine that. Every plastic straw might help keep carbon locked away instead of it getting into the atmosphere.
Right? That kind of spin just makes you rethink everything. Plus, if we shift to air-derived plastics, which don't use fossil fuels, it's a win-win. Even though plastics are only a small chunk of carbon emissions, every bit helps.
Moving on to tech, Google's desperation to scale its AI operations is a standout example. We had GPUs that were general purpose, but Google needed something tailor-made for their AI. Thus, the TPU was born.
It's incredible. The TPUs are like the special forces of chips, built specifically for AI tasks, ditching all the GPU baggage of handling graphics or video rendering. It's all about those massive matrix multiplications.
And NVIDIA also stepped up their game. Their new Blackwell chips with even higher memory bandwidth are a beast. But Google's 3D Torus network and optical circuit switch put them in a unique spot, not as flexible, but highly specialized.
It's like comparing a Swiss Army knife to a scalpel. NVIDIA's always been the jack of all trades, while Google's TPUs are the precision tools. Great for the specific task, but not as versatile. Yet, for dedicated AI workloads, TPUs might just edge out the competition.
Funny how it turns the cloud landscape into a battlefield. AWS, Azure, Google Cloud, all pushing their custom chips to get ahead of NVIDIA. Throw in Oracle and other neoclouds, and it's a full-on survival game.
Absolutely. And it's more than tech. Economics play a huge role. If Google TPUs can cut costs while boosting performance, that's major leverage. However, the ecosystem is still primarily in NVIDIA's favor since most engineers are trained in CUDA.
True. Adaptability is key here. NVIDIA is everywhere, while TPUs are niche in Google Cloud. Although Google's pushing for compatibility with libraries and other stacks, the migration hurdle is real.
Not just migration, but trust, too. AI workloads tie into big data, and moving data across clouds can be super expensive. Plus, the fear of reliance on one vendor, who could jack up costs anytime, keeps companies cautious.
This brings us back to the broader ramifications of AI evolution. Governments and businesses are navigating the shift from high-margin cloud services to practically a utility-like environment driven by low margins.
It's ironic. The innovation that promised high profitability now potentially leads to margin erosion. but controlling the hardware, like Google's TPUs, offers a route to reclaim those profits.
And under this pressure, we see companies like NVIDIA adopting liquid cooling to manage increased thermal output, a scene we wouldn't have imagined a decade ago.
Liquid cooling is almost becoming mandatory, with AI chips ramping up to over 1,000 W-berg. It's like racing to keep systems cool while pushing the boundaries of performance.
And speaking of pushing boundaries, storage solutions are evolving rapidly too. NAND flash manufacturers are focusing on low-latency SSDs to handle unpredictable AI I/O behaviors, boosting inference and cutting costs massively.
Energy storage is another game-changer for AI data centers. Those large, clustered systems demand stable power, transitioning energy storage from backup sources to core infrastructure.
The industry's shift to 800 volts HVDC architecture is a testament to this. Enhanced efficiency, reliability, and compact designs require advanced semiconductors, making cutting-edge tech like SESE and GaN crucial.
We're also seeing humanoid robots surge in shipments. AI adaptability and scenario-based design are driving this growth, changing how we perceive industrial applications.
As far as user interaction goes, Meta's Ray-Ban AR glasses integrating AI deliver a futuristic experience, transforming our digital engagement.
And the robo-taxi sector aiming for L4 autonomy is rapidly expanding. It's incredible to see AI maturity and regulatory loosening speeding up innovation across continents.
All this paints a vivid picture of AI's evolution. From high margins to utility functions, hardware innovation to nuanced economic battles, it's a thrilling yet daunting landscape.
A complex puzzle indeed, where every piece, from UVC lights to custom silicon, plays an integral part in shaping our technological future.
I mean, it's genuinely insane how much sleep works as a reset button for our brains, right? It's like the original low-power mode before tech nerds slapped it into our devices. And speaking of devices, let's dive into something a bit more concrete. How TPU compares to GPU performance, especially since Google's keeping those numbers hush-hush.
Ah, the classic TPU versus GPU debate. It's like comparing apples to, well, genetically modified apples. TPU, or tensor processing units, are specialized for machine learning tasks, while GPUs, graphics processing units, are more like the Swiss Army knife of processing power. They handle everything from gaming graphics to complex computations.
Exactly. While TPUs are super optimized for neural network operations, GPUs offer more flexibility. But here's the rub. Google isn't coughing up the exact performance metrics. So diving into industry reports and interviews is the best way to get a sense of what's happening in the trenches.
Right. From what I've gathered, TPUs are showing a significant boost in speed and efficiency for specialized tasks. But if you're running a broader range of applications, GPUs still hold the crown. Imagine trying to drive a race car on a mountain road. Sure, it's fast on a track, but wouldn't you prefer an off-roader?
Haha, good analogy. And it's similar when dealing with input devices. Understanding HID report and report descriptor can be a bit like decoding an ancient scroll, but it's crucial for making our hardware work seamlessly with the software.
For sure. Input devices use these descriptors to communicate exactly what data they'll send and how. This is defined in a struct called input dev found under drivers ultawill input.input c. It sounds complex, but think of it as giving instructions on what kind of information goes where.
Yes, and while the HID specification can appear monstrous, breaking it into usage pages and usages makes it manageable. It's like sorting files in a cabinet. You get a category and then specifics within that category. Helps keep things tidy and usable.
Absolutely. You just need to tackle those concepts like logical min, max, report size, and report count first. It's like setting your default parameters in a video game before you start rampaging through levels.
Speaking of rampaging, did you see that Burry's latest prediction might be stirring a bit too much panic? 90,000 newsletter subscribers already? What if his warnings about an impending collapse are self-fulfilling prophecies?
It's tricky. When someone with his track record speaks, markets listen, sometimes with irrational fear. But the anti-money laundering laws are throwing another curveball into the mix. FinCEN trying to regulate virtual currency mixers shows how much regulators are scrambling to keep up with the rapid pace of crypto evolution.
Definitely. I've read about the proposed IBIT option limits increase, raising from 250,000 to a whopping 1 million contracts. That's big. And no cap on physically delivered flex options? we're really moving toward integrating digital assets fully into mainstream finance.
Yeah, the definitional detail of these proposals is something that the industry needs to get right. It's essential for clear tax policies and holistic reform. This is genuinely about treating digital assets seriously and ensuring they're well-regulated without stifling innovation.
James Volpe's take is spot on, isn't it? Integrating digital assets properly could pave the way for massive benefits, but it's a balancing act. Any misstep could create significant issues for all stakeholders, from individual investors to large financial institutions.
So true. It's all about finding that sweet spot, fostering growth and innovation while maintaining robust regulatory frameworks. It's like we're sleepwalking through regulation. Every step needs to ensure we don't fall off the cliff into chaos.
Exactly, Cor. This dialogue continues to evolve, just like our understanding of sleep and tech. Balancing efficiency, performance, and regulations, whether in tech or finance, will define how seamlessly we progress into the future.
Jack, you know what gets me going in these debates? It's the nitty-gritty of how we actually get value out of our tech investments. Like with the perpetual license for FileZilla Pro, one-time payment, lifetime right to use. So efficient, right?
Exactly, Cor. Imagine the hassle saved. You reinstall your OS, and boom, just slap FileZilla right back. No recurring fees, no nonsense. It's comforting knowing you're not on a subscription hamster wheel endlessly paying.
Oh, for sure. Speaking of ongoing costs, let's jump to the comparison of hardware, like you mentioned, with H100s versus using a V5 ePod. 8 H100s are much more expensive compared to the one V5 ePod. But then, what about performance per dollar?
That's where things get interesting. TPUs, like the ones Google offers, can be real game changers. I mean, if your code base already runs efficiently on TPUs, it makes sense to stick with them. Better performance per dollar. And as Google keeps rolling out newer generations, the older ones get cheaper and still pack a punch.
Right. It's all about maximizing efficiency and minimizing costs. Think ahead. Consider long-term impacts, like future training workload. Sometimes the upfront hassle of rewriting code can save a ton in the long run if your hardware choice is more cost-effective.
It's like picking out drives for your DIY NAS. Everyone obsesses over the optimal boot drive, but really, it's the least important. Sure, it needs to perform, but don't lose sleep over it. Focus on where it truly matters.
Absolutely. And speaking of investments, let's touch on software like Procreate or LumaFusion. Arguably some of the best one-time payment apps out there. You pay once, and then the features you get. It's unbeatable sometimes.
Oh yeah, Procreate on the iPad is like magic for artists. $12.99, and it's yours forever. No monthly fee, just creativity unleashed. And then LumaFusion at $29.99? For what it can do, especially with added features, it's a steal.
It's fascinating how some tools have managed to stay clear of subscriptions. It makes a huge difference for professionals and hobbyists alike. Though, can we quickly touch on privacy and digital security? Buterin's tweet about encrypted messaging was spot on.
Yeah, Buterin really nailed it. Encrypted messaging is critical. Whether it's permissionless account creation or metadata privacy, it's about safeguarding our communication. Without such encryption, who knows how exposed we'd be.
And without privacy, expressing our true selves becomes a challenge. It's ironic, really. The digital world should make us feel more connected, yet with the lack of privacy, it's sometimes the opposite. You end up feeling monitored rather than free.
Couldn't agree more. It's like with the UK's digital ID scheme for accessing certain online content. There's a fine line between regulation and invasion. Encryption tools like Signal and newer ones like Session provide that safe space we need.
And as tech continues to evolve, so will these debates. Whether it's perpetual software licenses, hardware investments, or privacy concerns, it's all about how we adapt and protect our digital lives.
Right, Cor. These discussions are vital as we navigate this ever-changing landscape, balancing cost, performance, and privacy. It's a wild ride, but an important one.